Okay.
Parshas Achrimos and Kedoshim. You have another double parsha this week. A ton of mitzvahs, a ton of things to talk about in Achrimos and Kedoshim, but I'd like to focus on one little paragraph and two main ideas which come out from there. On page 654, this is the final paragraph of the first of the two parshas, Parshas Achrimos. The context of this paragraph is at the conclusion of chapter 18. Chapter 18, Perek Yitchas, is the laws of illicit relationships, forbidden relationships. The Torah has like three pages of forbidden relationships. Perek Yitchas begins on page 648. It goes through the whole list, which we are not going to focus on now, which is basically just that list of that which relationships are okay and those which are prohibited. The paragraph that we are going to study, these seven verses, are the conclusion of that list. Following, this is the do's and the don'ts, and here's where the Torah picks up on following that. Pasuk Chof Dala, 24. Al titamu b'chol eila. Do not become contaminated through any of these. So the Torah writer tells us that these types of things, a person who engages in any of these forbidden types of relationships, whether or not father, sister, mother, sister, father's brother, all the list of forbidden relationships creates what's called a tumah, a contamination through a defilement, an impurity through engaging in any of those types of relationships. Now, the Torah says, do not become contaminated through any of these. Ki b'chol eile nitmu hagoyim asherani mishaleach mipnechem. For through all of these, the nations that I expelled before you became contaminated. Now, where are the Jews standing right now when they're hearing this? Not yet. Where are we physically at this point in the Torah?
They're in the desert.
We're still in the desert, correct. Right, we're within the 40-year period after which the whole episode of the deserts, all of those episodes are taking place. We've left Mitzrayim, we received the Torah, we have the sin of the golden calf, the sin of the spies. We're wandering. We haven't even yet had the sin of the gold of the spies. That's going to come up soon. We're in the desert still. So Hashem is saying, but where I am taking you to Eretz Yisrael, I'm taking you to that land. Do not become contaminated with these types of relationships, because the people who currently live there have defiled themselves and become contaminated through these things. Vatitmo ha'aretz, 25. And the land became contaminated. So that the land itself has now become contaminated through the behavior of the inhabitants of the land. Vo'efkod avoyno aleha, and I recalled its iniquity upon it. I considered the sin, the contamination that has now defiled the land itself. Vatoki ha'oretz es yoshveha, and the land disgorged its inhabitants. Now, this is speaking in the past tense as if it's already happened, and it hasn't yet, but that's because it's just a prophecy which is going to take place. It's the language that the Torah uses. So we're speaking in the desert, and the Torah is, Moshe is speaking to the Jewish people as if it has happened, but it will, that the reason why you will be able to enter into the land of Eretz Yisrael, the reason why you'll be able to be there and take it over, is because the inhabitants currently have defiled themselves through these behaviors of illicit relationships, and the land has become defiled, the land has been contaminated, and the land spits them out, disgorges them, it vomits them out, because the land cannot handle such behavior. Now we're going to break from our usual, we're actually going to read all seven verses and then go back. So a break from our general procedure, moving a little bit slower, breaking down verse by verse. Let's get the whole flow of what's going on. So Tchafav 26, Ushmartem atemes chukosavi es mishpotai. So therefore you shall safeguard my decrees and my judgments. V'loisasu mikol hatoevos seilev. Make sure do not do any of these abominations. Hatoevos. These are referred to now as abominations. The people before you did. The land spit them out. As you go in, keep my rules. Do not do these abominations. Ho Ezrach v'Hager, Hagar b'Seichachem, both you and the Ger, the convert who lives amongst you. And now the Torah, as if we didn't already get the point, as if we didn't get the message from what has been said already, repeats it in Chof Zayin 27. Ki es kol atoivos ha'el osu anshei ha'aret asher lefneichem. Because all of the inhabitants of the land who are before you, they did commit these abominations. Vatitmo ha'aretz, and the land became contaminated. Sounds familiar? Right? So whenever you have this, there's something significant. Right? Moshe says to the Jewish people, I just gave you the list of rules. And I'm telling you, the people who lived in that land before you, they did these things, they did these abominations, the land spit them out. And then he tells them, don't do them. And then he says again, because the people who lived in the land before you did do them, vatitzmaharet, and the land became defiled. Chaf Ches 28. V'loy saki ha'aretz eschem b'ta'amachem oisa. In order that the land not disgorge you for having contaminated it, ka'asher ko'o et ha'goy asher lifneichem. In the way that it kicked out and spewed forth the nations that inhabited it before you. Right, point is clear? But what's the connection that we keep hearing over and over that the Torah is stressing? What's the relationship between these behaviors and the land?
Spits them out.
And the land can't tolerate this behavior. That's the relationship that is just being stressed over and over again. The nations before you did it, and the land couldn't handle it. So when you go in there, make sure you don't do it, because the nations before you were spit out, and you don't want to end up like them. So if you don't want to end up like them, make sure that you don't do the things that they're doing, or the same fate will await you. All right, let's actually put a break on it here. We'll do the second half in a moment. The last two verses. Okay, the Ramban here asks a question. Now, what I'm about to share with you, we learned in depth at length a couple of years back, but it's impossible not to at least share in brief as an introduction to the second half that I wanted to study this morning, just because of the timing of such. Today, of course, is being celebrated throughout the Jewish world as Yom HaAtzmaut, the day celebrating Israel's, the modern state of Israel's coming into existence 62 years ago. And I'm always amazed, it's almost like a bad thing that I should be amazed, but it's amazing to me the way that the Hashkacha, the divine hand ruling things, that these verses that we just read always come out during the week of the Israeli independence. As if to remind, like, the relationship between the Jewish people and Eretz Yisrael goes way back, way back. And it's always fascinating where, as we get caught up in the celebration of the modern state of Israel, that week's parsha always has this piece here, which the Ramban, which I want to share a few words on, has this long thesis of the relationship the Jews have to Eretz Yisrael, that Hashem has to Eretz Yisrael, always just coincides in a magnificent way. But the relationship is an old relationship. The very first thing that we have recorded in the Torah that Hashem says to Abraham, our first Jew, what is the very first thing recorded that Hashem says to Abraham?
Is it
Lecha? It sure is. Leave your home and go to the land that I will show you. Very first communication is, leave here and go there. And when Abraham gets to Eretz Yisrael, three or four psukim later, the very first thing that Hashem tells him when he gets there, this is the land that I will give to you and to your descendants forever. These are the first communications that we have recorded between Hashem and Avram in the Torah, is leave where you are, go to Eretz Yisrael, and when you get there, he says to him, this is the land that I'm going to give to you and to your children forever. No less than seven times in Sefer Bereishis does Hashem promise Avram. Seven times he promises Avram himself, I'm going to give you this land for you and for your children and for your children's children. This is your inheritance. This is your place. And then I would imagine, or I would ask that as a question, do you think Abraham told that to his son Yitzchak?
I would think so.
I would think so too. That Hashem comes to Yitzchak when Yitzchak is on his way out of Eretz Yisrael to go to Mitzrayim because of a famine, and he stops him and he says, I want you to stay here. And then he makes the same promise to him, and he says, this is the land that I'm going to give to you and to your children. Do you think Yitzchak shared that with Yaakov?
I would think so.
I would think so too. Yet at least twice we have in the Torah where Yaakov, on his way out of Eretz Yisrael, when he's running from his brother Esav, he has the famous dream, which we've studied at length at other times, where he has his dream on his way out. And Hashem promises him there also, this is the land that I will give to you and to your children. And when Yaakov returns, and he has a battle with Esav's angel, and his name is changed from Yaakov to Yisrael, during that prophecy, again, Hashem comes to him and promises him, this is the land that you're going to be given for you and for your children forever. So promises to Avraham, to Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Do you think Yaakov told his children about this?
I think so.
I would think so. The very last thing that Yosef says to his brothers before he dies, at the very end of Sefer Bereishis, at the very end, he says, I'm about to die. Remember the promise that Hashem gave to Avraham and to Yitzchak and to Yaakov that the land of Eretz Yisrael is going to be ours. He will redeem us from here and bring us there. So that the Sefer Bereishis ends with Yosef reminding his brothers of the promise to go back to Eretz Yisrael. And for 210 years, the Jews in Mitzrayim have a promise that they know about. They know that there's going to be heading back. That's the promise that Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, they've been promised. That's the land. That's the place that they're going to be going to. And for the 210 years, they're waiting for the time when that promise will be fulfilled. And they leave Mitzrayim, and it's just a few short weeks later, and there's a 40-year decree of exile upon them. And what are the Jews thinking for the next 40 years? What are they waiting for? 40 years for a fulfillment of the promise to Avram and to Yitzchak and to Yaakov that they're going to go to Eretz Yisrael, they're going to be going to the land that had been promised them. And after they finally get there, and they're there for over 400 years, they build a Beis HaMikdash. So when you're living in this special place, so your behavior matters. And when their behavior wasn't up to par, and they weren't nice to each other, and they weren't keeping the laws of the Torah, so the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed and sent out into Babel. And they're there for 70 years. And what are the Jews thinking for 70 years while they're sitting in Babel? 70 years, they're waiting for the opportunity to go back and to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash and be in Eretz Yisrael, which they do. And the Beis HaMikdash stands for another 400 some odd years. And then it's destroyed. And at this point, they're dispersed everywhere. North Africa, Spain, Portugal, Italy, France, England, you name it. We've been there throughout all of Europe, to the States, to the North American continent. And for 2,000 years, what are the Jews waiting for? They're waiting for Mashiach to come and to bring us back. I was just speaking to the kids at Torah Day School for Yom HaTzimut, and I was saying over to them the idea of Eretz Yisrael is home and we're going back, and I was thinking what a absolutely crazy thing this is. Look, here I am, 2,000 years after we are out of Eretz Yisrael, 2,000 years, and to what are we teaching our children? Not integrating, not becoming part of society, not, you know, making this our new home. It's for 2,000 years we have sat and told our children we're going home. This is not home. We're not there yet. It's not time to go. Throughout most of our history, it wasn't possible to go. But that has been maintained for 2,000 years. There's never been a people in the history of the world that have returned to a homeland 2,000 years after an exile. Never. That's unheard of that such a thing has happened. And it's because we continuously teach our children, we're not home. We're going back. We're still going back. And throughout the world, Jews teach their children that Eretz Yisrael is home. That's the place. Abraham's first communication, go to Eretz Yisrael. His first thing that he heard when he got there was, this is your land. Yitzchak has given the promise. Yaakov has given the promise. Yosef gives it over to the brothers in Mitzrayim. It's been the yearning always to be there. And that's been a long-standing part of everything that's been going on. So the Ramban asks on this pasuk, so he says, but why would the land vomit you out because of these relationships? What does that have to do with it? We can categorize the mitzvahs in many different ways, depending on what the agenda is. So one way to categorize it, are the mitzvahs dependent on the land of Israel or independent of the land of Israel? There are some mitzvahs which can only be done in Israel, and others which, that doesn't matter where you are, you have to do them. The mitzvahs of illicit relationships, are mitzvahs which only apply in Israel or apply everywhere?
Everywhere.
There's no permission to marry someone you know how to marry just because you don't live in Israel. It doesn't make a difference where you live. So the Ramban says, if it's not a mitzvah that's dependent on the land of Israel, if it's a mitzvah which applies equally everywhere, why the stress over and over again that if you don't abide by these laws, the land will kick you out? And that's what we've seen three times. The pasuk seems to stress over and over again, don't do like the nations that lived here before you because they didn't keep these laws and the land kicked them out. When you get there, make sure you keep them, or the land's going to kick you out too. What's the connection? So the Ramban says, and I intend to just do this quickly because, again, we did this at length for previous years, but just because today is the day that it is, you just have to say this over. The Ramban says, because when Hashem created the world, He provided a sar, a type of angel, an administering agent over all the nations of the land and all the lands that exist. And through that ministering angel, that land is controlled or directed. Exactly how that works, I don't know. I don't understand. I'm not going to get into that, exactly how that works. But there is such a concept that there is a sar, there is such a intermediary, so to speak, that the way that nation is controlled or directed stems through Hashem, through some other ministering agent. However exactly that works, that says the Ramban, except one place. And that's Eretz Yisrael. Says the Ramban, in Eretz Yisrael, ki chelek Hashem Elokecha, ki chelek Hashem Amo, Hashem's nation is His, and the land of Eretz Yisrael is His special place where there is nothing set up in between Hashem and the Jewish people. V'samli segula mikol hamim, you'll be a special chosen nation to me from all the other nations. Ki li kol haaretz, all the land is mine. I will be for you a God, and you will be for me a nation. And the relationship between Hashem and the Jewish people is unique and different in Eretz Yisrael in a way that it does not exist in any other way. Outside the land of Eretz Yisrael, even the, as he writes, Hakol L'Shem, everything is under the auspices of Hashem, controls everything, but Ein HaTahara B'Shlema, the purity is not complete. Because of the fact that there are these other factors, in however exactly that works, there are other factors which exist outside the land of Eretz Yisrael. That's why the Gemara says that someone who lives in Eretz Yisrael is compared to someone who has a God, but someone who lives outside the land of Eretz Yisrael is compared to someone who does not have a God. Doima Kamisha Ein Lo Eloiha. Says Rav, what does it mean outside of Eretz Yisrael you don't have a God? Of course you have a God, you have a Ribono Shelam, but not in the way you do in Eretz Yisrael. The relationship is such in Eretz Yisrael that when you compare that to someone who lives outside of Eretz Yisrael, it's as if they don't even have a God. They have no relationship because it's so vastly different outside of Eretz Yisrael than the way that it is specifically in Eretz Yisrael. That's why you find all of the Avos, they kept the mitzvahs specifically only in Eretz Yisrael. Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, when they were in Eretz Yisrael, they kept all the Torah's mitzvahs, even though it hadn't been given yet, but not outside of Eretz Yisrael. One last thing, I just want to, the Ramban has a very long piece, which I'm just skimming through just because I want to acknowledge it. One last piece, the Ramban says, there is a Medrash, Rashi quotes this as well in Chumash, that in Kriya Shema it says, V'yavadetem me'heira me'al ha'oriz ha'toivah. In the second paragraph of Shema it says, if you don't keep all these laws, you will be swiftly kicked out of the land of Eretz Yisrael. And the very next pasuk says, put on your tefillin, make sure you wear your tefillin and your mezuzah. And the Gemara makes the connection between being kicked out of Eretz Yisrael and the very next pasuk saying, wear your tefillin and put mezuzahs on your door. And the Medrash says, the Ramban quotes, Af ani shani megale eschan min ha'aretz l'chutz aretz, even though I'm kicking you out of Eretz Yisrael, even though you have to leave, hey, v'mitzuyonim b'mitzvos, you still need to do the mitzvos. The Psukim and Shema are telling you, you might have thought when you got kicked out of Eretz Yisrael, they don't apply anymore. So the Pasuk says in Shema, no, even though you'll be kicked out, what's the very next Pasuk? Still do the mitzvahs. Put on tefillin, put mezuzahs on your door. Why do I need to do the mitzvahs even though I've been kicked out of Eretz Yisrael? The Medrash says, kishetachzeru, so that when you come back, lo yihiyu aleichem chadoshim, it shouldn't be new to you. Because if when you left, you weren't familiar with them, you stopped doing them, when I bring you back, it's going to be like, what is this? My father didn't do this. I never heard it spelled before. What's a mezuzah? So in order that that shouldn't happen, when you leave Eretz Yisrael, I'm commanding you to still do all the mitzvahs. But where do I really want you to do them? It's Eretz Yisrael. This is where you're supposed to be. This is home. This is where the relationship is the way that it's supposed to be. Eretz Yisrael is geared for all the mitzvahs. However, I can't have it that when you're not there, you're not doing them. So therefore, the Torah commands, not a rabbinic thing, the Torah commands, when you leave Eretz Yisrael, I still command you to do the mitzvahs, because you need to be getting ready to go back. You need to be prepared for when we will return to Eretz Yisrael. And the Medrash quotes a mashal to a king who was angry at his wife and kicked her out of the home and said, but make sure you continuously adorn yourself with your jewelry and with your makeup so that when I bring you back, you know what you're doing. You're still familiar how to adorn yourself. So too Hashem kicked the Jewish people out of Eretz Yisrael but said, but don't forget how to adorn yourself with my mitzvahs, because when you come back, you need to know how to do it. It says in Ramban, Rashi quotes this in Chumash as well, the fact that the Torah commands us on the mitzvahs now, here in the States, is so that we are ready to go back, that when the time comes, we are ready to go in the place and the land that we are supposed to be. That, says the Ramban, is why when you're in that land, when you're in Hashem's backyard, in His home, if you don't keep these, there are certain types of relationships, certain types of illicit relationships of idolatry which create such a tumah, the land can't have it. The land vomits you out because in my backyard, you're going to do this? Can't be in my house and do this. Any nation can't. You can be any other place in the world, and if you do those things and you're not Jewish, or even if you are, the land won't vomit you out because the land can tolerate it. But this land of Eretz Yisrael can't tolerate it because my relationship, says Hashem, with the land of Eretz Yisrael is different than anywhere else. And the land physically can't take it, can't tolerate, can't accept certain behaviors. And the land will vomit you out of its presence. That, says the Ramban, in a brief nutshell, is what he says based on this week's parsha. Always amazing. This is the week when we celebrate the establishment of the state, and the Ramban reminds us of the nature, of the significance of that, the reality of the relationship between Hashem, the Jewish people, and the land of Eretz Yisrael as the place where He desires for us to be, the place where He desires for the mitzvahs to be kept, and everything that we're doing is in preparation, waiting for our ability to return to Eretz Yisrael, to be able to keep Torah mitzvahs, with kedusha, with tahara, with sanctity, and with holiness, and purity in Eretz Yisrael. Alright, that was just an introduction. Okay. Let us move forward in the last tubs of Kamer. So far we completed the list of the forbidden relationships. Hashem Moshe has now said to the Jewish people over and over again, don't do them, the land will disgorge you, will kick you out, will vomit you out. Don't do that which the nations of the world, of the land before you have done. And then he concludes his little speech in Chof Tes in 29, Ki chol asher yasem mikol atoevos ha'ela. Anyone who commits any of these abominations, the nichrasu hanefashos ha'oisos mikerev amam. The people who do so will be cut off from among the people. What is that punishment colloquially known as in our language? Kares. We call it kares. The nichrasu hanefashos. The souls will be cut off. Now, disregarding the English translation, which says the people doing so will be cut off, what would you say is the literal translation of the Hebrew phrase here in verse Chof Tes? V'nichrasu hanefashos ha'osos. How would you translate that literally?
The souls?
The souls will be cut off. The literal translation is the souls will be cut off from amongst their people. So the Ramban has an interesting problem on this verse. And he does a little study, which we can do together, since once he pointed it out to us. I already have all the sources in front of us. So let's pay attention to this particular phrase that we have over here. Let's compare that with a verse a little bit earlier in the parasha on page 646. And just flip back a few pages. 646, chapter 17, Perek Yud Zayin, verse 4. Torah is talking about doing avodah, offering sacrifices outside of the Mishkan. Once the Mishkan or the Beis HaMikdash is constructed, then the only place where you can bring a korban is in the Beis HaMikdash. And if one offers a sacrifice elsewhere, he gets into trouble. What kind of trouble? Says the Pasuk Dalet, verse 4, Vel Pesach Ohel Moed Lo Heviu. If the person does not bring it to the Ohel Moed, he does not bring his sacrifice to the Tent of Meetings, Lahakriv Korban La Hashem Lefnei Mishkan Hashem, to bring the sacrifice before the Mishkan Hashem, dam yechashev la'ishahu, that shall be considered as bloodshed for that man, dam shafach, he has shed blood, v'nichras ha'ishahu mikerev amo. And what is his punishment for someone who does an offering outside of the Mishkan, outside of the tabernacle?
The man
looking. Right? Kares. He has the same punishment of Kares of being cut off. But what's the difference here in the Hebrew? Now it's Ha'ish. We went from, and now the English here is misleading because it translates in English as the same both times, but the words in Hebrew are very different. In the Pasuk here on page 646, discussing service outside of the tabernacle, it says, V'nichras Ha'ish Hahu. The man will be cut off from amongst his people. And in our verse, where in verse 29 on page 654, discussing illicit relationships, there the punishment for one who engages in such behavior is v'nichrasu hanefashos, his soul will be cut off. So the same basic punishment called kares, cut off, one time it refers to it as the man will be cut off, and one time the soul will be cut off. That's not confusing enough. The Ramban brings a third place where the Torah describes this punishment. That's on page 815. You'll flip back there. Pasuk Lamed Aleph, verse 31, intentional idolatry. So moving to one of the more severe prohibitions, the Pasuk says in verse 30, let's just start there, V'hanefesh asher ta'aseh biyad ramah, a person who will act high-handedly, mino ezrach u'mino ger, either whether he's a native Jew or a ger, a proselyte Jew, Megadev v'nichrasa es Hashem, who Megadev, he has blasphemed against Hashem, v'nichrasa nefesh ahi mikerev amah, and his soul will be cut off from amongst the people. That would fit with that second verse, right, his soul. Now listen to what happens here. Ki dvar Hashem boza, for he scorned the word of Hashem, and that's mitzvah so hefar, and he broke his commandments. Hi kares, ti kares hanefesh ahi. That person will doubly, right? Whenever we have a double language in Hebrew, it always connotes some type of, like, surely, like it really is going to happen, as it's translated here. That person will surely be cut off. Hikares tikares. So the Hebrew is a double language. So we have a hikares v'nichras ha'ish. We have a man being cut off. We have a soul being cut off. And then we have a double language, hikares tikares anefeshehi. That soul shall surely be cut off. So this was not lost on the Ramban. And the Ramban points out, why are there three different ways in which the Torah seems to describe this concept of kares? Three different forms of kares, whether or not it's the man being cut off, the soul being cut off, or this double language surely being cut off, or literally would be translated as, he shall be cut off, and he shall be cut off twice. Explains the Ramban as follows. So far so good, and that's clear? Says the Ramban as follows. Category number one. There are actually three different categories of kares, where there's a lot. There are 36 different times in the Torah where the Torah gives a punishment called kares. 36 different types of violations which bring that punishment. Every violation in the Torah has a specific type of punishment. That's how we can tell how severe it is, whether or not the punishment is lashes, or it's a death penalty, or there's a monetary fine, or there's what we would call this kares. There are 36 instances out of 365 prohibitions in the Torah. 36 of them come with what's called kares, being cut off. Well, what does it mean to receive a punishment called kares? What does that entail? So the Ramban points out, as we're about to see, based on these three verses that we just studied, there are actually three different categories of kares, three different forms of the punishment. Says the Ramban as follows. Category number one is a person who eats either chaylev or dam, who eats either some of the forbidden fats or forbidden foods, different types of food, which are some of the types of prohibitions in the Torah. V'hu tzadik, v'rubo zuchuyos. In general, the guy is a good guy. He does, if you add up his mitzvahs and averas, he's clearly on the side of majority of mitzvahs. Majority of his life is spent doing the right thing, and on a big scale up in heaven, he's weighted towards tzaddik. He's weighted towards the side of righteousness. Just, he has a problem. Govra ta'avoso olov. He has a taiva, he has a desire, whether or not it's for, in these particular cases, eating blood or eating these forbidden fats, which don't necessarily relate to us, but whatever it may be, we're talking about the theory of the concept. The person who's generally good has a certain shortfall when it comes to this particular desire. V'nichshol ba'avera hahi. And he stumbles on this particular avera. But it's one of the 36 that the Torah says, I don't want you doing these, and this is severe. And if you do it, your punishment is kares. What will the kares look like for a person who in general would be viewed as a tzaddik? He just has this little bit of a problem that he can't control this particular desire. Yichrasu yomav, his days will be cut short. The yomos b'ne'urim kodim she'agia liyamei ziknan. He will die early before he reaches old age. Ve'ein nafsho b'hi kares. But his soul will not be cut off. Meaning, we have that, which phrase would that be? V'nichras ha'ish shahu. That man will be cut off, meaning his physical body will be cut short, but not his soul. His soul, we would judge overall as righteous. His man, his body will be cut short. He will die young, says the Ramban, but his soul does not get affected in any way. He will have a portion in the world of the souls after we die. Here we go up into the world of the souls. His soul will have a portion in that world. He will have also a portion in the Olam Haba, the world to come. Now the Ramban has a language here which is different than the language we usually use. If I use the phrase Olam Haba, what do we generally think that means?
Messiah.
I think most people don't. You're right, according to the Ramban, but that's not most people. I use the word personally all the time, Olam Haba, to mean after we die, the place where our soul goes. That's called the Olam Haba, which literally would translate as the world to come. The Olam Haba, the world which is coming. The Ramban is a different language, which is based on a tractate, Sanhedrin. The last chapter there has all large discussions about this. The Ramban's language is, the place where our soul goes after we die is called the Olam HaNeshamos, the world of the souls. That's the place where the soul goes after we die. And then when Mashiach comes, and there's the Tchias HaMesim, the dead are revived and brought back to life, that world that we will exist in, where our souls will have been brought back into our physical bodies, and we will live again, that's called Olam Haba. That's the world to come. So, I mean, there's much discussion about this in general, but the language that the Ramban uses is that which we normally refer to as Olam Haba, the place where our soul goes, that he refers to as the Olam HaNeshamos. And then when the soul will be brought back and put into a body, b'tchias hameisim, when the dead are revived, which is a fundamental tenet of Judaism, that when Mashiach comes, Hashem will bring the dead back to life, that's called Olam Haba. That's just as far as his language goes. Regardless, what the Ramban says is, a person who gets kares, but if he's the type of person who in general would be viewed as a tzaddik, overall in his life has been good, but he has a shortfall in one of these 36, and he can't hold himself back, and he's nichshol, he falls and stumbles in that, the type of kares that he will get will be a physical, the nichras ha'ish. The man will be cut off, meaning his physical life is cut short, but his soul is unaffected, it will receive its portion in the world of the souls, as is befitting him, and that soul will have its place in the world to come, when the dead are brought back to life, in Tchiyas HaMesim, what the Ramban calls Olam Haba. And he suffered kares. So there's a type of kares which will not affect the spirit. Says the Ramban, that's one type of person. There is a second type. V'asherim acheta chomer ahu, but if a person, when he sins in one of these 36 types of prohibitions, which brings the punishment of kares, you have onosov merubin mischiosov, but that pushes him over, where now he no longer can be considered an overall tzaddik with one little black spot. He is now would be viewed overall as his demerits are far greater than his merits. Then the onesh hakoresh be'avera chamur, then when he does one of these 36 severe punishments and he's overall viewed as a rasha, someone who has more avonos, more averos than he does mitzvos, then it's magia l'nefesh hachotes. Then the punishment of kares does not affect his body, it only affects his soul. That's the phrase of v'nichras hanefesh. The soul will be cut off. Le'achar shetiporin min haguf, after the soul is separated from the body in death, nichras ol mechaye oilom haneshamos, he is cut out from the world of the souls, where the soul goes after life in this world, that person's soul is cut off, as the phrase says, v'nichrasa hanefeshahi, the soul is cut off. V'elu, and these people, ein lahem kores begufam, they have no impact whatsoever on their physical bodies. They might live long lives. And that's still called kares, because there are two types of kares. There's a kares for the person who's generally a tzaddik. His kares is during the physical world. His life physically is cut short but his soul continues on. Category number two, says Rabban, is the opposite. Someone who is overall not a tzaddik, someone who is overall much more averus than mitzvos, he physically will be unaffected by his punishment to kares. Might go on for years. But afterwards, then his soul gets it, and his soul is kept out of the world of the neshama, says Rabban. It has no portion in that, cut off from its people.
We read examples where it has nothing to do with about the person, but the avera that he committed.
Correct.
And Rambam's thus saying he's putting kind of a relativity to who they are.
Right.
But won't the, of the 36, won't they specify what kind
of... Yeah, now if we did a larger study, we would see that the places, the context in which the earlier one was said, I believe will line up more with where he is. But that is a fair point and would require a greater study to see the context of each one. He is definitely, and that point you're saying is well taken, putting a much more broad context, not specific to the exact definition each one is given. The third category, says the Ramban, is worse. It's v'nichras gufo v'nafsho. It's a person who's going to get it on both ends, where the body will be cut off, short, and the soul is cut off. And that's the person in which the last phrase that we read, where we say, Dvar Hashem bizo, he took the word of Hashem and totally disregarded it, broke from it. That person is cut off from both in the world to come, as well as in this world. And that's specifically only said by idolatry, where that is the pinnacle of brazenness in front of Hashem, where you bring in other gods knowingly, there, that's where we have that double language. In that context is the worst, where you're totally cut off both in this world and in the next. And the other circumstances, it depends where you are when you violate this, whether or not only your body is cut off, but your soul will continue on, or whether or not your soul is cut off and your body might continue on. That, says the Ramban, is the three categories of what's called kares. So when the Torah says the person is now liable to a punishment of kares, what exactly that means would be determined based on the Koran's Ramban's understanding on what his general status is. The Ramban does not mention, which I want to mention, that kares affects anyone's children. That was not one of his options. His options are either you yourself are cut short, or your soul is cut short, or both. But that's not an option. Rashi, on the other hand, on this verse, does mention that. And Rashi says, the Ramban quotes it here from a different verse, where Rashi says, Zaro nichros v'yomim nichrosim, that your children are cut out and your days are short. Where that a person's kares can even affect his following generations, and that one's children die early as well. But the Ramban does not mention that as far as in this discussion of his, as far as what the three categories are. Okay, that's the end of the frightening portion of today's lesson. Now, the Ramban, I'm going to take a deep breath. We're done with that part. Yeah.
You know, so if we're supposed to live till 120, then it seems like all of us are being cut short.
What do you mean we're supposed to live till 120?
Isn't our lifespan really 120?
I don't know, is it?
That's what I've heard.
I don't know. That would be nice. If that were true, then I guess you could say that. I'm not familiar with that there was a supposed to.
You wish that for someone because
I don't think it's wrong. Right.
But I guess what I was assuming was that meant that that's what our life expectancy is.
Only
and
most
cut short. And, pardon?
Impossible. Yeah, I don't know. You might be right on both accounts. I'm just hesitant. I just don't know what's going I don't want to make any. So I just don't know. Who knows why anything is going on? I just don't know.
I'm listening to you say a lot of times you don't know.
That's true.
Yeah, and we learned that, and you taught us that last week.
That's right.
When they went in to check
the house. Yes, we're right.
I don't know either.
Yeah.
I don't know either.
There is far more that I don't know than I do know. So it's fairly common that you'll hear that.
I don't question it. You're okay. You're okay.
Okay. The Ramban uses this discussion as a springboard for one of the more fundamental discussions that he has in his commentary of Chumash. And that is this idea of the neshama, because as he's discussing here the concept of kares, what is it? The term is very vague. It just means you'll be cut off. The person will be cut off. The soul will be cut off. What does that mean? So Ramban explains, as we just saw, well, one time the person is cut off, but his soul will continue. The other time the soul will be cut off. And that's his understanding of the simple meaning of the psukim when it describes this punishment called kares. So says the Ramban, Viteda, you need to know that this whole discussion, this concept, is a proof, says the Ramban, a bitachon gadol, one of the great fundamental proofs to the trust and faith and belief that we have as Jews, bikiyum hanefashos achrei hamisa, to the concept that the soul continues after death. Uvimatan haschar ba'olam haneshamos, and the concept of reward in the world of the souls. Now what the Ramban is stating in that line, and I'm pretty sure we discussed this in this context before, because it's such a fundamental concept, the Torah doesn't mention explicitly anywhere that there's a concept of a soul after death going to this place called the world of the souls and receiving eternal reward. And it doesn't say that. You can read from Bereshis until the end of the Chumash, and it does not state clearly, explicitly in any one verse that I want you to know that you were created from that there is a soul and a body, and then after a person dies, the body is buried, and the soul goes up to Shemayim, and there it receives reward. There's just no statement that says that. So says the Ramban, and many of the commentators address this question, well, how do we know that? The sages talk about it nonstop. That the fundamental concept throughout the works of the oral law is constantly stating that. This world is a prosdor, this world is the antechamber to get ourselves ready for the world to come. They have numerous statements. He who gets himself ready before Shabbos will have what to eat on Shabbos, which they say in reference to preparing it while we're in this world for after this world. Whatever we do to prepare here, we'll take with us. The sages are replete with such statements. But the Torah itself doesn't say that. So the Ramban takes this opportunity to say, this is where it's letting us know. Because when it says, v'nichros ha-nefesh ahi, that the soul will be cut off, to which the Ramban just explained, what does it mean the soul will be cut off? Well, that means different than when it said the person will be cut off. When the person will be cut off, that meant the person dies early. But when the soul is cut off, that meant that the soul is kept out of the world of the souls and from Tzchias HaMeisim. Says Ravan, well then this is one of those references where you point and the Torah is telling us there is a concept of schar in the world to come. There is a concept of reward in the next world. Because when the Torah says that the soul will be cut off, Yorah, the Torah is teaching us, this soul will be cut off from the world of the souls. The Shar HaNefash is, what about all the other souls who didn't do any one of these 36 violations, any one of these 36 prohibitions? Will maintain itself and always exist before Hashem in the glory of His presence. Why, says the Ramban, is that so? So the Ramban says, very simply, where did the soul come from? Well, let me ask you another question. Why does the Torah not say so? Why does it only hint at it? And why does it only talk about these types of in punishment, by Kores it talks about it. So the Ramban says, where does the soul come from? So that's an explicit pasuk. Where does the Torah tell us, where does our soul come from? Yeah, which verse? He breathed into the man the breath of life. In the beginning of the story of Adam Arishon, when man is created, Vayipoch ba'apav nishmas chayim, Hashem breathed into this man the breath of life, breathed into him the soul of life. As the sages have told us, Ner Hashem, the Nishmas HaAdam Ner Hashem, the soul of man is like the flame of Hashem, it's like a candle, the little portion of godliness is each one of our soul. Well, when the body dies, where is the most logical place for the soul to go? Back from where it came. You can't take a soul and put it inside the ground. The body, which is physical, can be buried. But the soul, which is the spark of life, the godliness that Hashem Himself breathed into us, where else is it going to go? Says the Ramban, obviously, that's going to go back. Vihilo tomos, it can't die. It is whole and complete. It's not contained with anything physical in any way. And therefore, kiyumo roi, it's being able to maintain itself, is the most fitting thing for it. Vuhu omeid la'ad, and it should remain forever, like any of these spiritual beings, it should maintain itself forever. Ulekach. Now the Ramban answers the question, why does the Torah not state explicitly the reward for doing mitzvahs will be Olam Haba, will be the world of the souls? Lekach lo yitztarech hakosov loima. The Torah doesn't have to tell us ki b'schus ha-mitzvah ziyeh kiyuma. The Torah doesn't have to tell us that if you do a mitzvah, you'll have eternity, your soul will remain forever. That's obvious. What does the Torah have to tell us? The Torah does have to tell us be'onesh ha'averos tizgo'el v'titame v'tichros min hakiyum haroi, that you can do something in this world physically, with your body, that can destroy the godliness that's put in you. That, I would have said, is impossible. How can I take a soul which was given to me, a chelek eloika mimal, a portion of God Himself, which He puts inside of me in the form of a soul, how is it possible for me to do anything in this world that can destroy that? So the Torah says, it's possible. When I created you and I put that soul in your body together, and now you're a person, you're a human being, there are things that you can do in this world which will not only destroy your body, that we know we can do, it's easy to destroy our bodies in this world, you can even do things which will destroy your soul. And I need to tell you that. I need to tell you v'nichras ha-nefesh ahi, that your soul can be cut off, because you would have never guessed that on your own. You would have guessed, okay, maybe my body I can harm, but my soul? Says the Torah, I need to tell you that. But that your soul should receive reward, I don't need to tell you that. Like, what else is going to happen to your soul? Of course it's going to receive reward. That's what it was sent down here for. It's a portion of godliness itself. When it's done in this world, it's going to go up to Shemayim and receive all of its reward. This is why, says the Ramban, this answers another question that we all should have. And that is, when the Torah does discuss reward, and it does in numerous different places, what type of reward does the Torah regularly talk about?
Long life, a lot of time.
Very physical rewards, a long life, rain, cattle, health, peace, children, money, very physical things the Torah talks about. Says the Ramban, as many of the other commentators ask, I don't understand here. If you looked at the Torah, what you would see would be, when the Torah discusses reward and punishment, it talks about very physical rewards and punishments. When it talks about spiritual punishment, we have kares. No, there's no reward for the soul. So why is it that when we talk about rewarding the soul, nothing is spoken about? Punishing the soul, we have. And when we do talk about rewards, we talk about it in a very physical sense. Says the Ramban, because it's the same idea that I've been saying. I only need to tell you things that you wouldn't have known on your own. That your soul is going to go up and receive its eternal reward, that's obvious. That you can cut off your soul with a physical act, that's not so obvious. That I need to tell you. That you'll get rain because you put on tefillin. Put on tefillin, it's going to rain. What does that do with anything? There will be peace in Eretz Yisrael if you keep Shemitah. I keep Shemitah, I keep the land, I don't work my field the seventh year, and therefore the surrounding nations don't attack me. I don't understand. What does that have to do with anything? Says the Ramban, they don't have anything. It doesn't make any sense. So the Torah promises us and has to tell us that which is miraculous and makes no sense. If you keep my laws, and you observe the laws of the Torah, and you keep the mitzvos, you will get rain and peace and prosperity and health. Because really, they have nothing to do with that. How in the world do you explain that? Go to your local weather forecaster and tell him, I'll tell you if it's going to rain in Eretz Yisrael. Let's see how much the Jews are learning Torah. That will determine how much rain is going to fall this year. You want to know the peace? Forget your Mideastern analysts. They don't know anything. It all matters whether we keep Shemitah. What? So the Torah tells you that because that doesn't make any sense. So on the things that are miraculous and that you wouldn't have thought on your own, the Torah takes the time to tell us. And all the rewards the Torah promises us, because they don't make any sense and they're all miraculous, so the Torah takes the time to tell us this is how it's going to work. But the major reward, the primary reward, the reward of the in the world of the souls, I need to tell you that. Like, what else did you think was going to happen to your soul? Of course, your soul comes down. It's a piece of godliness, and when you're finished with 120 years in this world, it's going to go up and receive its eternal reward, obviously. And well, what else were you thinking? So that's the one thing that's not said in the Torah, says the Ramban. But kares, to cut off a soul, is taught, because who would have thought that? and physical rewards for spiritual acts, that is told to us, because that doesn't make any sense. Those are all nisim v'niflos. Those are all miraculous events which don't fit, they don't make sense, and therefore the Torah takes the time to tell us them. And that, says the Ramban, is all hinted at in this pasuk of that he who violates these abominations and has these illicit relationships, their soul will be cut off. And in that, says the Ramban, here's where the Torah is giving us a hint. Their soul will be cut off, but everyone else's soul, obviously, will not be. That's the standard. The default position is that your soul is not cut off, that it goes into the world of the souls to receive eternal reward. But if you do these things, then the soul gets cut off. And that's how the Ramban understands that concept of the reward and punishment that's stated in the Torah. And those are the two major Rambans here on the very end of this parsha, one which we discussed in the beginning, the concept of the Eretz Yisrael, why the land will vomit out in its inhabitants because of the close relationship between Hashem and the land of Eretz Yisrael and the Torah and the Jewish people, where the relationship is different there than it is everywhere else. And that's why the land vomits out its inhabitants, followed up by any type of illicit relationship is such that the soul is cut off, the three different categories of kares, the soul, the body, or both, and that it's a proof, says the Ramban, from this idea of the concept that in general the default position is that the soul will live eternally. That doesn't even need to be said. That's the obvious. I only need to tell you that the soul can be cut off, and I only need to tell you that there are physical rewards which don't make any sense or have anything to do with us abiding by the laws of the Torah. But that's the Ramban's approach to the end of this parsha and his two long pieces, which I hope I summarized accurately. And with that, I wish you a wonderful day. We should all be zeichet to get there to Israel soon. Keep all of these mitzvahs.